Make sure to check us out on Letterboxd for written reviews.
For films that we've done not only on the podcast, but outside of the podcast too.
Links in the description below.
Everyone, and welcome back to the Rewatch Podcast. My name is Samuel.
And my name is Jaden.
And this is a podcast where we talk extensively about a certain film and then decide whether it deserves a rewatch from you. You can find us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other place you listen to podcasts. And today, we're going to be talking about a newly released movie that's kind of taken the world by storm.
Mm-hmm.
That movie is
Top Gun Maverick.
So a sequel to the original Top Gun.
Yep.
A good 30, 40 odd years ago.
36.
It's back in cinemas. The franchise is back.
And cinema's back.
It's better than ever, I think.
Yeah.
It's better than ever. So, we'll go to a bit of a story overview for Top Gun Maverick.
Do you want me to give the plot synopsis?
Here you are. I've got them.
Rightio. Let's just kick it off with the header. Feel the need. The need for speed.
Yeah.
Yes. After more than 30 years of service as one of the Navy's top aviators, Pete Mitchell is where he belongs, pushing the envelope as a courageous test pilot and dodging the advancement in rank that would ground him. Honestly, it's not that good of a plot synopsis. We probably could have found a better one than that.
It's not as energetic as the movie itself, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't even mention the whole sort of final mission.
Yeah, the mission that they go on.
What they're trying to do. Because unlike the first Top Gun, this actually has a story and an objective.
Right.
And that plot synopsis doesn't cover that. But
what do you mean by the first Top Gun doesn't really have, like, an objective?
Well, I kind of touched on this on my Letterboxd review, but it's more so just like a hangout movie. Like, you sit down, you have a beer or two, and you just watch people having fun.
Yeah, you just vibe.
There's nothing going on. If you told me to summarize Top Gun, the original, I would have no idea what it's about. Like, what happens in that movie?
It's essentially just a bunch of masculine men learning how to be aviators. And in the meantime, they're very sweaty and energetic and they're all cocky and confident.
Yeah.
And there's no hesitation from any of them. They're all very sure of themselves and they're just having a good time while they're at it.
In a way, I kind of look at Top Gun 1986 as this is the first time that, you know, cinemas had access to, you know, Navy boats and these aircrafts, and they're just like, okay,
just having fun.
We're just going to make a movie with all this new stuff.
Just film some planes going around and we'll just sort of do the story to accommodate for that. But then again, like, watching those planes fly around is entertaining in itself. Like, I would happily just sit down and watch like 30 minutes of just those sort of planes just like dogfighting or whatever.
Yeah.
But then again, it's not to say that the Top Gun story isn't, like, the Top Gun characters and the story isn't engaging. You know, I think Maverick's character and Iceman's character and even Goose to a certain extent are very interesting characters in that original movie. And that's the reason why it kind of works. Like, you know, the airplane stuff is very cool, and we see in this movie that it's very cool, but it's also, you know, you can't have constant airplane action. There has to be some sort of slow moments where we get to know the characters, and both movies do very well with just the characterization of those characters, I think.
This was very common in these sort of late 70s, early 60s, early 80s movies, where you have these sort of like a protagonist and then like a bully character.
Yeah.
And in a way, Top Gun Maverick sort of feels like a return to that sort of formula, because you've got Hangman, played by Glenn Powell, I think, is sort of like that Iceman sort of character.
Mm.
And then obviously you've got Miles Teller playing Rooster, who's the, you know, the new sort of Pete Mitchell Maverick sort of character. Right. And it's simple, but it's definitely effective.
Yeah, for sure. And it definitely executes what it needs to do in order to get the entertainment value out there. It's very focused on its characters, but it's also very aware that it needs to get the characters right because the action is so good.
Yep.
And if you get both of those things right, you've got a fantastic movie here. And I think both elements were as good as each other, really. Mm-hmm. And they worked to enhance the other thing, because if you care about the person in the cockpit,
mm-hmm.
it's automatically going to be more interesting than just watching some random person or a character that you dislike in the cockpit there doing outrageous flips and stunts and everything like that. So we'll go into some general thoughts. Would you recommend this film to someone who hasn't seen it? Would you recommend watching the original in preparation?
Yeah, for sure. I would watch the original in preparation, just because you're going to be able to understand the characters and their motives a lot better. Although in saying that, the second movie does touch on all of that. So if you watch this movie just on its own, you're still going to be able to understand pretty much the basic premise of everything.
Yeah.
But in terms of a recommendation, 100% I would recommend this pretty much to anyone.
Yeah, it's one of those films. It's so rare nowadays, because not even the superhero films can do it. It's a film that anyone can go and see and have a good time, because the characters are so good.
Mm-hmm.
And because, I mean, at a base level, I think every citizen just thinks it's interesting what the Navy does with all these jet planes. I think it's very cool. I don't know. Everyone just finds that very engaging.
I mean, fighter planes. What's more cool than that?
Yeah, it can't get cooler than that. And then you have Tom Cruise riding around on a motorcycle, you know, with a gorgeous bike and a gorgeous lady. And he's got the aviators on. And, it's a vibe. And he's the coolest, coolest caricature of a middle-aged male.
I mean, you think like 80s action star, you think Tom Cruise, Top Gun, you know?
Yeah.
He's got like his bomber jacket on. Like you said, he's got his aviators on.
Yeah.
He's like
hot blonde.
Yeah. He's just like a staple of like 80s cinema. And that's definitely like still apparent in this movie.
Oh yeah. He brings that same energy.
Mm.
And I was very impressed.
We had a touch on this. Yeah.
I was very impressed with what he did. But in terms of recommending this film, I agree. Everyone should go and see it. It's a film that definitely needs to be seen in the theatre as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of the sound of the planes and the spectacle of it all.
Yep.
So definitely go see it in the biggest, loudest
cinema possible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely worth it. And you've seen this film twice.
Yep.
So is it worth a rewatch? How did you find it on the rewatch?
Heidi actually asked me this question. She said, was it better on rewatch? It wasn't better on a rewatch, but it was just as good.
Yeah.
Like I enjoyed it just as much on this watch as I did the first time around. And I'm actually going to go see it again tonight. So that's 3 times in 1 week. And I'm sure I'm going to love it just as much this time around.
Yeah. So you weren't watching the movie the second time, because sometimes this happens. You watch it a second time and you see some faults and you think, oh, I wish that was better. That scene doesn't really make sense now that I've seen it twice. You know, mm-hmm. I'm just thinking about, you know, when you rewatch some of the MCU movies and you're just like, what on earth is going on here? This is a terrible scene. Or, you know, maybe the first time I thought it was cool, but actually it kind of looks bad, like anything like that.
I was set on some stuff after the first watch of the movie, where I was like, okay, that probably could have been done a bit better. I probably would have changed a few things there. And that's still apparent on the second watch. But that didn't necessarily, you know, make me frustrated or angry, because I already felt that my first time around.
Right.
So yeah, I've got faults with this movie, but in a way, I still really enjoy the movie for what it is.
Yeah, fair enough, fair enough. I am keen to see it again, whether I see it in cinemas or I get the 4K or, yeah, it remains to be seen. But mm-hmm. I think I'll give it a few days and, you know, if I've got some spare time and there's nothing else on, which I don't think there will be for at least, you know, a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Buzz Lightyear coming up, which is, I'm very worried about. But it's a fun time. And
yeah.
It doesn't ruin the movie that came before it, which we'll definitely talk about a bit more later on. But it's so remarkable what they've done with this film. And I definitely encourage people to support this sort of stuff because we need more of this.
This feels like real, true cinema. Like, I haven't felt this in quite some time. You know, we've got all these sequels coming out from Disney and you've got Pixar just, you know, keeping on, you know, pushing out these Disney Plus releases, and it just doesn't feel like cinema. And you know, the recent Warner Bros. Fantastic Beasts released, I've got no interest in seeing that. Like, I've watched the trailers, it's uninteresting. I've seen number one and two, they're both uninteresting. Like, that doesn't feel like cinema. When I think of cinema, I think of like 80s, 90s, 70s, like real true movies, all your Star Wars, all of your Mad Max, which I watched recently. That feels like cinema to me. And this is like a return to that.
Mm.
This is like real, true filmmaking.
Yeah, yeah. The last time I felt that was when I was watching Dune last year.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my top movie last year, obviously, by quite a margin.
Yep.
And I think this film rightfully earns the top spot from this year so far as well. We do have Avatar 2 to go, obviously, which I am pretty intrigued about.
Mm-hmm.
I won't let myself get too excited for it because you just can't do that nowadays.
Yeah,
you can't see a sequel being announced and go, oh yes, I'm so excited because I love the original and I know that they're going to build off it.
Yeah.
Because often they don't.
Yeah.
We've seen this with the Star Wars sequels. We've seen this with virtually every other million-dollar franchise. Like, any Disney franchise, any Marvel franchise,
mm-hmm.
they get worse as they go along,
yep.
and they detract from the original. Whereas this film, Top Gun Maverick, is respectful to the original,
mm-hmm.
harnesses what's great about the original, and gives you the nostalgic moments, gives you the fan service that you deserve as a fan.
Yep.
But then also takes advantage of modern technology, takes advantage of modern day storytelling.
Yep.
And makes it better.
100%. And the last thing, or the last film that I can think about that should have had this prestige was The Matrix Resurrections.
Oh, yes. That was a big one.
That was a huge one. I love The Matrix. It's one of my like top five favorite films of all time. Absolutely love that movie. And I was so incredibly excited for The Matrix Resurrections. And it was one of my worst movies of 2021. It just in every way, it just detracted from the original. It tried to get those nostalgia beats sort of going, and it just didn't work, man. But in a way, this is just, it's so honoring of the original film. Like, it doesn't detract from the original. It doesn't overthrow the original.
It doesn't disrespect the original.
Doesn't retcon it. It does exactly what it's meant to do, and it executes it brilliantly.
Yeah, and I don't think anyone's sitting around like saying, you know, 10 years ago, oh, you know what? I really need? I need a sequel to Top Gun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think there was a huge sort of fan movement for a Top Gun movie.
No.
People just quietly enjoy the original. It's a classic, you know. It's a classic sort of action 80s, you know, fun time movie.
Mm.
And so when I saw that they were doing a sequel, I was thinking, oh no, you know, why are we doing this? Why are we dragging up an old franchise again? We've seen this story over and over again.
Yep.
It's not going to work out. It's going to be mediocre at best. It's going to detract from the original. But this was the exact opposite of what I was worried about.
I could not be more surprised. Like, I had zero expectations going into this movie. When the trailer first released, I was completely uninterested.
Mm.
Because by that point I hadn't seen Top Gun. And then I eventually watched Top Gun in preparation for this. And I still didn't really feel excited for it. So I went into this movie with zero expectations, and it completely blew me away. It was such a great time.
Yeah. Let's talk about staying spoiler-free at the moment. Let's talk about some of the characters and some of the sort of acting performances that we liked.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, have to start with the main man himself, perhaps the last movie star to ever live. The last true movie star, that's for sure. Tom Cruise. He has solidified himself, I think, as the leading action hero of ever.
Yep.
You know, some people would say maybe like
Bruce Willis,
but Tom Cruise has consistently been in very, very good action movies.
Yep.
You know, think of Top Gun,
The
Mission Impossible, Days of Thunder.
I mean, he was in Jack Reacher as well, but that wasn't that good. But
yeah, and then even something like Collateral as well was really, really good, in my opinion. I know you didn't particularly enjoy it.
Edge
of Tomorrow is quite good. Yeah. That's obviously very modern as well. I mean, things like A Few Good Men is in an action movie, but that's one of the movies that really solidified him as a movie star. And he's just continuously, you know, done very, very good performances.
Yeah, I mean, you think action, you think Tom Cruise, right? And
you think Tom Cruise sprinting down a road, chasing after someone.
He's a very controversial figure. You know, he's done some stuff in the past, you know, Scientology and whatnot, where people just don't like this guy. But I think regardless of what you think about a person, you should separate that from the movie and the movie process. It's sort of with Mel Gibson, where people just hate on Hacksaw Ridge for absolutely no reason.
Yeah, when it's a great movie.
When it's a fantastic movie. But Tom Cruise, he's one of my favorites. Like, he might be my favorite male performer out there. I just think everything he does is fantastic. I'm so excited for Dead Reckoning, which is coming up. Yeah, it's just, he's consistently turning out great movies. Mm.
He's kind of reminds me of sort of a better version of Dwayne Johnson. Mm-hmm. You know, Dwayne Johnson's always talking about how hard he's working and, you know, how does the song go? You know,
it's about drive.
Yeah, it's about
power.
Yeah, he's always, you know, drive, you know, power. You know, he's always pushing himself to...
He's just turning out as many as he can. Like,
yeah, he's always saying how hard he's working and how much he's training and stuff. But Tom Cruise consistently works very, very hard, puts all he has into his roles, does the stunts. Dwayne Johnson doesn't do the stunts for his own action movies. Tom Cruise does. And Tom Cruise doesn't tell everyone about it every second of the day, how hard he's working. He just quietly goes about what he does best, which is acting in these action movies and doing it very, very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
And doing his own stunts as well. What a madman he is.
Yeah. I mean, the guy's like, what, almost 60, 56 or something? And he's like jumping between buildings, holding onto airplanes. I mean, it's ridiculous what this guy's doing.
Yeah. So that's the difference for me between a modern-day movie star and an actual movie star.
Yep.
You know, Dwayne Johnson and Tom Cruise.
Yep.
I know which one I want in my movie.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And think about which one's probably more expensive as well.
Probably Dwayne Johnson. Yeah. And probably, sadly, nowadays, probably a bigger draw at the box office.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll see how Black Adam does, but it's actually going to be interesting comparing Top Gun Maverick's box office performance to Black Adam's, because they are two sort of quintessential action hero men, and it'll be interesting. They both have very big movies coming out this year, so it's going to be interesting to see which one sort of beats the other out.
Yeah.
Who else in the cast did you like?
If we're just going sort of down the list, Miles Teller as Lieutenant Bradley Rooster Bradshaw. I think he was fantastic in this. He's done quite a lot of stuff that I've seen. My first introduction to him was actually Fanforstic.
That's rough.
Yeah, I know. it's a horrendous movie. And I quite literally, I can't remember his performance in that. But he's also done these Divergent, Insurgent, Allegiant movies. which I watched a few years ago, and they're absolutely horrendous. Think like Hunger Games, but worse. But
worse, yeah. Yeah, it's like the classic teen dystopian novel to book thing.
Exactly. Terrible movies.
Yeah.
He's done a few things with...
Have you seen War Dogs?
No, I haven't.
That's quite entertaining. It's kind of like Wolf of Wall Street, but...
Oh, this is with Jonah Hill.
Yeah, yeah. It's
kind of... it's Todd Phillips. Yeah, okay.
It's kind of like Wolf of Wall Street, but probably not as good. Mm-hmm. But same sort of vibe. And I thought he was really good in that, but I watched it a few years ago, so it's not really fresh in my mind. But
yep.
Obviously the standout from Miles Teller was Whiplash, and probably what sort of brought him onto the...
His performance in Whiplash was just absolutely incredible. One of the best movies I've ever seen, but also one of the best performances I've seen. This came out 2014, so he was fairly young in this. Mm.
And what a performance.
What a performance. He's also done a few things with Joseph Kaczynski. He's done this one, which is Only the Brave, which actually has a pretty good rating, so I'm curious to check that one out. Mm. He's done Top Gun, and he's more in the future. He's doing this one called Spiderhead, which hasn't been released yet, but that's got Chris Hemsworth in it as well.
Interesting.
So we might have to check that one out.
Okay.
What did you think of his performance in this movie?
Seeing the trailers, I knew the character that he was playing,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't really get too excited by his casting. I don't know what it is, but maybe he just didn't have that superstar sort of draw for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know why I was skeptical, because he was so good in Whiplash. But it's a very different character, you know, a musician
yep.
and a fighter pilot. Has yep. very different people.
Very different.
But he pulls this one off very, very well. And he does have to put in a bit of a performance. It's not just a walk in the park. For a lot of these actors that are playing pilots,
mm-hmm.
they had to do a lot of training. And they also had to do, like... a real emotional performance to sort of make this film work. And I think Miles Teller was very, very good. I couldn't fault the performance, to be honest.
Honestly, I couldn't fault any performance in this, really. Mm. We'll touch on a few more, just sort of the big names. Jennifer Connelly as Penny Benjamin, who is sort of the love interest for Tom Cruise in this movie. She's done a fair few movies that we probably should watch. But we haven't gotten around to them. Things such as 2003's Hulk.
Wow.
which, I mean, who watches that movie? What did you think of Jennifer Connelly in this film?
I mean, it's very clear what her role is. You know, it's a bit blunt, but she's just the hot female love mm-hmm. interest. That's her role in the film.
Yep.
That's what the role of the blonde in Top Gun was.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't really have an integral story role, but she is very necessary, because we do need Maverick to sort of talk to somebody that he cares about the issues in this movie. We need somebody to sort of elicit that exposition there. How does Maverick feel about these things? He's not going to just walk around and tell everyone how he feels. He's a very reserved guy. So
yep.
we need somebody for him to open up to. And I think some of the scenes between Jennifer Connelly and Tom Cruise were very good. I think they had good chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she was perfectly fine. I didn't think her performance was bad at all. I've seen some people say that her character's kind of irrelevant. But the movie doesn't really work as well as it does without her, because you do need those scenes where Tom Cruise is opening up and showing his more vulnerable side. And he can't do that in front of the other pilots. That would just be ridiculous. You yeah. know, we can't just have Tom Cruise sort of bleeding his heart out.
It's not the character.
In front of these military officials, like mm. you just can't do that. It would take away from the military American aspect of the film.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think she was great. And some of the scenes between them were very funny. I enjoyed them. There's some more of the comedic moments.
And we'll touch on this later, this sort of balance between, you know, seriousness and the comedic scenes. Yeah, but we'll touch on that later. Mm.
What was any other standouts from? Because we have Tom Cruise, who's the instructor, mm-hmm. and he's teaching this group of fighter pilots. Who was the standout, apart from obviously Rooster, who's obviously the second main character in this film?
Mm-hmm.
From the group of fighter pilots, who did you like the most?
I mean, Glenn Powell's probably your next biggest one. He just plays this role so well, and he's got that face as well.
He's playing Hangman?
He's playing Hangman. Yeah. So sort of like the Iceman of the new generation.
Right.
Like I was saying, he's just got this, in a way, it's just a very punchable face.
Yeah, yeah.
So employing him as the sort of the villain, if you want to call it, of the movie, it was just so genius, man. Like, look at this guy. Like, he's just such a
what
cocky...
What other roles has he done? Because I have seen him before. I've seen him in some other things, but I don't know if... Dark Knight Rises, what?
I think he was some sort of mayor.
Was he a police officer, maybe?
He could be.
There's a lot of people in Dark Knight Rises.
If he's
not at the top, I think he'll be just some useless person.
Traitor. Oh, so he's...
He was in the stockbroker. He was one of the stockbrokers that Bane, like, beat up.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's where I might know him from. But I have a feeling he's been in some TV shows that I've seen because I do recognize him.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I do have a feeling that I've seen him in a TV show sort of regularly. But, yeah, I think he was great in this.
I mean, he did pretty much with everyone in this movie. He just did exactly what his character needed him to do.
Didn't overstep the boundary at all.
Yeah. And just circling back to Jennifer Connelly, like, I think the whole storyline between her and Maverick is one of the weaker parts of the film for sure. In a way, I probably wanted more of it, more expansion on it. So it's not the fact that I didn't like her performance. It's more, I just wanted more of it. More story there.
So we have Val Kilmer, who was originally playing Iceman in the original film. He sort of returns for a short but very meaningful cameo appearance. Mm-hmm. What did you think of that?
Well, are we in spoiler territory?
Well, I guess tread carefully, but what did you think? Like, was it nice to have him in the film?
Yeah.
And do you think that his inclusion was like fan service-y, or do you think it was done well, like in terms of the story? Or
I mean, pretty much with everything in this movie, it's in respect of the original film. You know, they have that sort of ending in Top Gun where they reunite and they have the happy ending.
Yeah.
And this just goes on to expand onto that. Like, we know they're still friends. And it's just like, we needed something like that in here, you know? Yeah. I definitely think Val Kilmer, with you know, his condition and his state right now, something like this is just a great sort of thing for him to do,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, for sure. Sort of just tie
up his arc.
Yeah, exactly. Capping off the sort of the role.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would sort of be a shame if he wasn't. Because he's such a vital part of the first film. He is the antagonist.
Yeah, for sure.
It's one of his bigger roles, I think. So, yeah. Good to have him back. Let's move to some of the visuals, unless you have any other acting performances.
Well, there was John Hamm, but he wasn't very, you know, he sort of played the villain. You could call him like somewhat of a villain in this. Yeah, I mean, he just had some principles that didn't align with, you know, the protagonists of the story. Like with pretty much everyone else, I think what he did just serviced the storyline.
Yeah,
well.
And I think that Admiral character
mm-hmm.
was acting very reasonably from his perspective, which is very important, you know, to make the story realistic. He wasn't a character where you necessarily, like, hated him, like you wanted him to be like fired or you just couldn't stand him. You could see where he was coming from, and he did have like the best interests of the mission, you know, in mind. But yeah, obviously just goes about it a different way to the way Maverick does, and because we love Maverick so much, we just disagree with his viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But if we were one of the fighter pilots and we were one of the you know, the soldiers going out into that dangerous scenario, maybe we would have a different perspective and we would think that the Admiral's approach was better than Maverick. So
yeah.
I think it was very important that his, you know, how he approached the situation was very reasonable.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
In terms of visuals, what did you like in terms of visuals from this film?
I mean, everything. And this is what we've been saying for so long. Like, you can make a movie that doesn't have green screen overload. I couldn't pick apart a point in this movie where there was green screen. I'm sure there was, probably in some of the fighter pilot sequences, just because I doubt everyone was a trained fighter pilot like Tom Cruise was. So some of those...
Oh, I think a lot of them were. I think, they had to go through extensive training from what I know. It sort of was a big push in their marketing.
Okay.
They were... So all of them would have known how to actually fly the plane.
Yep.
But obviously there's a lot of stunts that they wouldn't let even Tom Cruise do. I reckon Tom Cruise probably flew some of the planes at some stages,
mm-hmm.
but I doubt he was able to, you know, fly in between the pillars and, you know, do all those dangerous stunts.
But he's fully trained in like aircraft.
Oh, yeah, exactly. A lot of all of the other cast, the people that we see flying the planes, knew how to fly the planes, and probably filmed their stuff in maybe like a simulator or something,
mm-hmm.
and then they pasted them into the cockpit with a professional fighter pilot in there doing the.
Yeah,
the dangerous stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So there's sort of a mix, but you don't notice it. Like it's very.
They might as well be in there.
Yeah.
They could be, for all we know. Like it's you can't really tell. You can't fault it.
No. Yeah, I absolutely loved the flying sequence. It's some of the best work I've seen in quite some time.
Mm.
Like the level of anxiety and just like stress and just. Like you're constantly like glued to the screen. Like it's just incredible how they did it. Like, we keep saying this, but we need more of this stuff, man. Like
more practical.
We need more practical effects. There's not enough. Yeah.
One of the things that really made it visceral mm-hmm. and real was their breathing.
Yep.
And how their body sort of responded to the G force. You know, whether they were acting, whether they were doing it for real, I think a lot of the time it probably would have been for real.
Mm-hmm.
But when Tom Cruise is like tilting the plane, you can hear his body go like, you can see like the breath like escape his lungs and how much of a physical exercise it is to just flip the plane so fast and go from left to right so fast. And that's what made it so exciting because you could, it really... felt like he was really doing it. Like,
yeah,
you could feel the toll that it was taking on his body when they were flying up really, really sharply.
If you compare something like a Star Wars X-Wing.
Yeah. Which seems like a breeze. You just sort of.
Yeah. I mean, it should be an X-Wing should be like this.
Mm.
Patty
Jenkins is going to have a rough time doing her X-Wing movie now that this has come out because she set out to make the best fighter pilot movie ever.
And I
say good luck to her,
mm-hmm.
but there's no way, I'm calling it now, there's no way it's better than this.
Yeah.
Unless she just rips this off, which is highly possible.
It's just because the Lucasfilm and, you know, Disney is known for just... They don't utilize practical effects like they should be. And this got the balance so well that it feels so realistic. And I know that Disney's not going to do that because of their track record in the past. And you can hate on us all you want for us saying this, but we have to be realistic here. Rogue Squadron is no way going to look better than this.
Oh, for sure. And we were saying, if Lucasfilm made this movie, so if Lucasfilm made a legacy sequel, Maverick would be a terrible pilot.
Mm-hmm.
All of his recruits would be telling him how old he is and how he's, you know, he needs to move aside because
mm-hmm.
he's just terrible.
Yep.
And we would find out that Maverick's having a really tough time in just all aspects of his life. You know, Iceman hates him. Everyone hates him.
Mm-hmm.
He's terrible at his job. And then, you know, he, by listening to these new young recruits, he will be able to redeem himself by giving them a go or whatever, you know. And that's not what we want to see. We love Maverick.
Mm-hmm.
He's the main character in the first one. He's the main character in this one. We want to see him succeed. We want to have known that he's lived a somewhat good life. You know, he hasn't just been done what Han Solo has done and just reverted back to, you know, just wipe the character development off and start again.
Yep. Well, think about Han Solo. Think about Mark Hamill's Luke Skywalker. Think about even Obi-Wan Kenobi, Ewan McGregor in the recent TV show. They're all like hermits who are just like done with life, you know?
So they just, and these are all very heroic characters when we last see them, and then they just wipe the slate clean and start over again.
Yeah.
Even in the case of Obi-Wan, where he never was a hermit, he was always very noble and heroic, and Lucasfilm just loves just taking that character and then just like wiping them out and making them the worst possible version of themselves. So then they can rebuild back to where they were, but they don't even do that. Yeah. They don't even, so they end up just knocking the character backwards in time and then leaving it at that.
And they don't even fix it.
Whereas this takes Maverick from where he was when we last saw him and builds.
Yeah. It's just,
that's how you do it.
You think Lucasfilm would have learned by now. Look, I wanted to touch on just a bit of the crew. We don't do this a lot in our podcasts, but I think this is very well justified for us to have a talk about this. Joseph Kosinski is the director, and the only other film that I've seen from him, and I think you have seen from him, is Tron Legacy. Which is another legacy sequel. Honestly, yes. The first Tron might have came out around about the same time that Top Gun came out. 1982, Top Gun was 1986. So he likes to do these remakes in a way, or legacy sequels. I didn't like Tron Legacy. And I didn't actually know that Joseph Kosinski was involved with Top Gun Maverick. So before I saw this movie, I wasn't really worried.
Right.
If I had known.
Because of Tron Legacy.
Yeah. And if I had known that he had made Tron Legacy, I would have been quite worried. because Tron Legacy, look, I haven't seen the original Tron, but I didn't enjoy that movie.
Yeah. It has good elements. And I don't think the key thing from Tron Legacy is that Tron fans like it.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of did its job.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's supposed to be another one coming, but I swear it's been coming for like 10 years. And
yeah, I think it's got, it's Morbin time in it.
Jared Leto, yeah. Yeah, but I swear when we had Harry on like 2 years ago on the podcast, so over a year ago, he said it was coming, but
it's still not out.
It doesn't seem to be coming.
We haven't heard anything.
It's unfortunate. He's obviously not even directing it, because it doesn't even say on his,
profile,
filmography, that he's actually directing it.
I mean, just, you know, take a look at like the CGI difference. Like this movie, Tron Legacy, is completely soaked in CGI.
Yeah.
And then you take a look at Top Gun Maverick, it's the complete opposite.
Yeah.
I know which one I like more.
Yeah.
I reckon Joseph Kosinski has found pretty much his stomping ground with Top Gun Maverick.
It's certainly the best movie he's done from what we've seen.
I haven't seen
many of his movies, to be fair, but he's done Oblivion with Tom Cruise, and that seems to be like an average movie. Like, I don't hear a lot about it.
Mm-hmm.
I have always wanted to watch it. It does kind of look cool, but
yeah, but like, I'm not going to be scared of the guy anymore. He clearly knows what he's doing. He picks his cast well. He picks his crew well. And he smashes out of the park. So I'm very excited to see what he does in the future.
Who else involved did you enjoy?
Look, you've got some pretty big name directors. Jerry Bruckheimer, who's done all the Pirates of the Caribbean. I can't really say too much about him. I don't like talking about a lot of producers just because
you don't know how involved they really are. They could just be like, here's some money, do what you want. Or they could be like Tom Cruise, who probably had a lot to do with the success of this movie.
I mean, well, Tom Cruise is producing on this. Yeah. So he obviously knew what he wanted, and he said, okay, this is what's going to happen. We're doing this. And that's probably why his character was so good, because Tom Cruise understands the character the most out of everyone.
Yeah.
But Christopher McQuarrie, who I've been very, very vocal to you about, I haven't really said it on the podcast, but like, I'm obsessed with this guy. And when you watch his Mission Impossible, I mean, look, he's on Edge of Tomorrow. So the guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
He's directed the very recent Mission Impossibles. He's doing the ones coming out in a few years' time. And Fallout is one of, if not the greatest action movie I've ever seen. Just hiring this guy as a producer on Top Gun is just like a galaxy brain moment, you know? Like, it's just...
Good job.
Yeah, I mean, just incredible job there. And he's done a lot of stuff with Tom Cruise. Like, he's done Edge of Tomorrow, like we just said.
Even Rider for the Usual Suspects, that's like a classic film. I haven't seen it, but I've heard very good things.
Mm-hmm.
And if to have him having written that is very impressive.
Yeah, like, the guy's obviously a big name. Yeah, look, I'm very excited for what Christopher McQuarrie is doing in the future. And we'll probably touch on this when we get to the music segment. But just the people involved in this, you know, Hans Zimmer, this guy who I don't know too much about. Look, he's done the original Top Gun, so we had to get him back. That's Harold Faltermeyer. Lady Gaga's also on there.
Yeah.
But you've also got Lorne Bolf, who I know you're pretty hit or miss about. He did Black Widow. But he he also did the most recent Mission Impossible.
Yeah, so that's okay.
I quite like a few of the stuff he does. But he's skeptical at times.
Yeah, for sure. So let's talk about a bit of the sound design then, because my goodness, this film sounds absolutely fantastic. Not necessarily talking about the score, but just the sounds of the aeroplanes flying through the sky. It's such a vital part of this movie. You have the vibrations from the engines, and just whenever an aeroplane sort of fires up its engine in this movie, it's so cool and you're just so ready for it. Yep. You know, it's just such an entertaining and sort of visceral moment where you're just like, yeah, it's a cool aeroplane. It's about to take off. Look at the fire. It's so cool.
I mean, are we in spoiler territory now?
We're approaching it.
Okay. The first time I watched this movie, it was in a like a lesser quality theater than what I saw it on the second time. And the second time around, with that whole intro sequence with that plane.
Yeah.
And the startup sequence.
This opening montage. It like
blew my socks off. So I was like, holy smokes. Yeah. Like, these speakers are just insane.
And the vibrations, like if you put your feet on the ground, you can feel like when the airplane starts up, it goes, like you can really feel the vibrations. It feels like you're on the actual platform where the plane is.
Mm.
It's such an important part of the theater experience that many people just don't like register.
Mm.
They think, oh, bigger screen, you know, if, as long as the screen's big, it'll be fine.
But comfy chair.
Sound is so important to, you know, just the entire theater experience. And we saw that with Dune.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think Dune.
Mm. And obviously Hans Zimmer involved with this movie as well. So it just goes to show that Hans Zimmer just keeps on delivering. Like, we don't say
it's like his meter's touch, you know?
He just comes onto every movie that he just knows is going to be fantastic and has great sound. And, you know, he's got the James Bond, he's got Top Gun, you know, just...
The guy just doesn't miss with his picks.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. So I guess, you know, we'll enter some spoiler territory now. So if you haven't seen the film, definitely recommend it. We're going to dive into some spoilers, both for the original Top Gun and this film, because they're very interrelated.
You can't talk about one without the other.
Yeah, so let's start with the original. What is it specifically that you think the original got right?
Definitely the dynamic between Goose and Maverick and how Tom Cruise's character was affected by Goose's death. That's always been, we talked about this quite a lot, but that's always been the heart of Top Gun.
The central part.
Is that sort of relationship between these two guys.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise was like, he's been devastated by Goose's death, but like we said before, he still lives on.
Yeah.
He's got that regret sort of lingering in the background with, you know, with Rooster. But yeah, it's just so clear that Top Gun Maverick understands what Top Gun is about. Joseph Kaczynski gets Top Gun.
Yeah.
He understands it. Yeah.
Yes. And it's quite rare to do that for a new director to come in and then instead of trying to do what he thinks is the best, he reflects on what the original director, Tony Scott, did. Tony Scott?
Yep.
Right? Yeah. And he's obviously really examined what he did with the first Top Gun. You know, lots of orange sunsets, lots of like, you know...
Beach sports.
Yeah, beach sports and... lots of canned people and just good vibes.
Jokes and
piano
playing and
hardcore masculinity with no sort of compromise.
A lot of macho stuff going on.
And who knows, people, well, who could have guessed people are still entertained by that nowadays, because we've certainly been missing a lot of that in modern entertainment. You know, sometimes you just want a good fun movie that has great values and just sort of knows what it is. This is clearly a movie that does not overstep its boundaries. It's here to entertain you, and it's very focused on entertainment.
Yep. I said this before with Top Gun. It's like a hangout movie, right? Like, you just sit down and have a good time. You feel like everyone in the movie is like your mate. Like, you know them on like a first name basis. But the reason Top Gun Maverick is so good is because it understands that it's like just pure fun, but it has a story as well.
It's very serious at some stages, and you have to be serious in order to get those emotional payoffs at the end. So I completely agree. The central part of Top Gun is Goose and Maverick, and so going into this sequel, the central part is Goose and Maverick and Goose's son, Rooster, and they clearly set up the dynamic at the start of the film that Maverick has pulled Rooster's papers from the Navy because he didn't want Rooster to join the Navy, because he didn't want Rooster to come to harm.
Goose's mother, Maverick made a promise to Goose's mother that, you know, he wasn't going to fly like his, sorry, to Rooster's mother, that he wasn't going to fly like his father. And, you know, Maverick kept that promise, and that's why he pulled those papers.
And that's what makes Rooster mad at him. It's not just because Rooster's dad died with Maverick, because if it was solely that, it's like a bit, oh, come on, Rooster, like, you know, use a bit of brain power here.
It was out of his control.
Yeah, it was clearly an accident, and it even is mentioned in the movie that it was ruled that Maverick was not at fault.
Yeah.
In fact, I think we even see that in the original Top Gun movie. I think it's right afterwards. It's sort of a mellow scene where you just hear like the judge just say like it was an accident.
That happens.
So if this was done by Lucasfilm, they would have just taken that and run with it and said, he thinks he killed his father.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all we need to do. We don't need to do it anymore than that, you know. We don't need to invest more time in that. That's it, we've done it. But no, you need more than that, because a reasonable person wouldn't hold a grudge like that. Mm-hmm. You know, eventually you would have to forgive. I mean, it's been 30 years.
Yeah.
So.
But this is so realistic, like pushing him back 4 years. I know if my career or my degree was held back 4 years, I would be furious, man. Like that's my livelihood. That's what I live for. So completely justified from Rooster's perspective.
Exactly. And it's that little step that this movie takes that other studios would not have taken that really makes it excel. And that the central thing of this film is Rooster and Maverick and their relationship. They start off butting heads. By the end, they're hugging. Mm. And at the start, you're very serious. Like, oh, this is a tough relationship here.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the end, you're like, oh my gosh, they're hugging, they're forgiving each other, I think I'm going to cry. Yeah. You know, there's a lot in between then, but that's the beginning and the end of the movie. And that's you know, the whole point of the movie is them, so their relationship. And the movie, it knows that. It knows it so well.
Mm.
Every single scene is dedicated to that relationship.
Yeah.
Building that up. It's not just, here, look, there's a cool plane, danger zone, you know, you like that, right?
Yeah.
They do the nostalgic stuff, and they also do the hard work with the new characters.
Mm.
Got to give credit there.
Yeah.
So we talked about the Hollywood movie star. Tom Cruise, obviously, he's as best as he's ever been in this movie. I mean, he's still at the top of his game.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from Scientology, what do you think makes Tom Cruise such a star in this film?
Look, in particular, I'm just going to sort of talk about Tom Cruise just generally.
Yeah.
I think it's just his dedication to real cinema. He said he's pledged before, and he keeps on pledging
An Amber Heard style pledge.
An Amber Heard style pledge. That he was going to release this film in theaters. Nowhere else. This was an exclusive theater release. This guy waited how many? I mean, this was pushed back a few years.
Yeah, I think it was filmed in like 2018.
Yeah, so like this has been around for quite some time. And he waited till 2022 to release it. And that is dedication. Mm. And look how much money this movie made.
Yeah, certainly worth the wait.
Worth the wait, 100%. This is releasing on Paramount Plus 45 days after release, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Which is pretty standard for movies nowadays. It's just going to assist with money. So I'm happy for that to happen.
It may prevent it from pulling more than
it could,
but I mean, Paramount Plus is a pretty like unpopular streaming service platform. It's not like Disney Plus.
Exactly. So yeah, so it's got that exclusive theater release, which I love. Tom Cruise kept on pushing for that. Amazing job.
Yeah.
Respect that. Look, the guy is just, he's so realistic with what he does. Like we touched on before, he does his own stunts. So everything he does feels realistic. And when you're watching a movie, you don't want to be pulled out of it because, you know, Dwayne Johnson's doing some skyscraper movie.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've seen
that. You can point to the green screen.
Yeah. So all of this feels real. I mean, Tom Cruise did a stunt in 2018's Fallout where he jumps from one building to the other.
He breaks his ankle.
He breaks his ankle and he keeps on running. Like, the guy is so dedicated to his craft. It's ridiculous. So to me, that's what makes Tom Cruise so fantastic, is just his... He doesn't want to leave real cinema in the past. He's bringing it with him. And everything that I've seen him in, he does that. He's so true to cinema.
Mm. Yeah, you got to respect his sort of dedication. And
yeah.
I really enjoyed his performance in this film. You know, he's not just playing Tom Cruise. Mm. You know, he's not just playing himself like Dwayne Johnson does a lot.
Yeah.
And I fear Dwayne Johnson's going to do that in the Black Adam movie. Mm-hmm. That's my only reservation from the Black Adam movie.
Yep.
Tom Cruise is a dedicated actor, and you can really look at his performance in Top Gun and then see the same character in this, but then it's not the exact same character because, you know, this isn't the exact same character. This is the same character, but 30, 40 years later.
He's matured a bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you have to sort of adapt the performance, but he gets the mannerisms so correct.
I mean, it's crazy, right? Like, think about, you know, 36 years later, you're returning to the same character, and this guy is still able to, like, get back into those shoes. Mm. It's really insane, and I don't think we give actors in general enough credit for that. Having these huge gaps between these sequels and still being able to perform the character.
Yeah. Just take, for instance, the I was inverted scene in the original Top Gun, and then compare it to the scene where he's first meeting the generals, and he's like, I just want to manage expectations. Or he's like, I wasn't expecting to get an invitation back, and they're like, it's orders. You know, we ordered you back here. Yeah. You know, it's not an invitation. You're here because we told you to be here.
Yeah, and he's like, your reputation precedes you. And he's like, oh, thank you. Yeah. It's not a compliment.
Yeah, so it's the same character, and he does it so well, and it's different from the Mission Impossible character.
Yeah.
You know, it's very different. So I appreciate Tom Cruise in this movie. But let's talk about the other stars in the movie. You particularly enjoyed the diversity of the fighter pilots and how the diversity of the team in terms of their character, in terms of the people there, it wasn't a story point, but the diversity of the characters makes it interesting. You know, you have all the different personalities, right?
Yep.
So what did you think?
Look, whenever diversity is coming up into film, I'm all for diversity. I think we need more black actors out there. I think we need more female actors out there. I think we need more Latino actors out there. You've got all three of them in this junior sort of rookie Top Gun cast. And they service the story because that's what they're meant to do. It's not flat out, hey, I'm a black character. Yeah. That's what I am.
Yeah, that's their only personality.
That's not
trait.
Their only personality. You're a Top Gun fighter first.
Yeah.
And that's what this movie understands. It understands that, you can have these diverse characters, but don't shove it in the audience's face. And I love films that do that, man, because clearly they are mature. The people that are making these films, they know that we need this diversity, but they're not going to smack you and say, hey, here's two gay characters. That's what they are.
Yeah. And that's all they have to offer to the story. There's the fact that they're gay.
Yeah.
And also we'll take that out of the China version of the movie.
Yeah.
Because we really care about these issues.
Yeah.
But also we like money more.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, I agree. I really liked all of the different personalities from the pilots.
Yeah.
You know, there was clearly sort of the cocky leader or thinks he's the leader. There was the sort of silent leader in Rooster.
Yeah.
There was the female pilot that sort of had her Monica, own.
Monica Barbaro, who plays Phoenix.
Yeah, she was also Love like her. Just one of the gang, you know. Yep. She wasn't particularly like, oh, you know, I'm a woman, I'm Rey Skywalker, and I'm, you know, here to just beat all of you. She was a member of the team.
Yep.
And think of something like Kenobi. We need those Inquisitors in Kenobi to be a team. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how they're formidable, as a team. There's more than one for a reason. They should be acting like a team.
Yep.
But they just can't stop trying to, you know, out, you know, roast each other, you know, and try and vie for the top spot. It's like, if you'd actually just work as a team, you might just get the job done.
Yep.
But this group, we see them sort of bond together, work as a team, and all of them have their own separate personalities, but they also know when to just get in line and just do the job.
Yep.
And that makes them not pretentious and makes them very likable and driven.
Yep.
And I appreciate that.
Yep.
And I enjoyed all the characters. So how about that?
Yeah.
That's how easy it was.
I mean, that's how you do it, right? There's not one moment in this where it's like, I'm gay, I'm lesbian, I'm black, I'm Latino, I'm Latino. That's who I am. It's very subtle. That's how it should be.
Mm-hmm.
You hire these people. They do what they do. Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They get the job done. That's for goddamn sure. And I mean, even the unlikable one at the start, Hangman, becomes the fan favorite at the end, because he comes in and we see that he's not selected for the final mission.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of a defeat for his character.
Yeah.
But we kind of like him by that stage, so that we kind of think, oh, that's a shame. You know, he can be a bit of a prick sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But we've seen how likable he can be sometimes.
Because they set that up, right? Yeah. Before Miles Teller Rooster goes on this mission, he's like, give him hell, Rooster. So he's sort of handing over that recognition.
Yeah,
and then he
respects
they,
him.
And then they get the payoff later. Yeah. So they set it up.
Where he comes in, saves the day.
Yeah, they set it up, they dunk it, and then boom, it's perfect.
That's a movie.
Yeah.
That's how you do it.
Yeah.
Set up, payoff. There it is. It's not that hard.
Mm-hmm.
You're watching Lucasfilm. Okay, so we've talked a bit about the group dynamic,
mm-hmm.
but Rooster and Maverick are the core of this film. And I think where that really becomes apparent is when, after they do the final mission, which is pretty insane. I mean, what a spectacle. Mm-hmm. Just all of the flying, but the final mission itself, you're so on the edge of your seat.
Yeah.
And it's intense, and the camera work and everything is incredible.
Yeah.
And then once they do the big mission, a lot of studios would say, look, that's the end of our movie, let's go home.
Mm.
But this makes it more interesting because a few things go wrong, which, mm-hmm. you know, is expected. We didn't expect it all to go as planned.
Yeah.
But it goes wrong, and that the things that go wrong end up servicing the main component of the story, which is Rooster and Maverick, because they end up together and they have to work together as a team, and they bond, they save each other's lives, and that gives us the huge payoff at the end, the emotional payoff. So exactly. What did you think about that final battle and everything that happened then?
There was a point where we were sitting in the cinema and you leaned over to me and you're like, man, this movie is fantastic.
Yeah.
And I said to you, I was like, you wait, just wait.
Just wait for the final bit.
The third act in this movie is just absolutely phenomenal. Like, some of the best filmmaking I've seen in quite some time. It's just the way how it diverts your expectations, how they've sort of built up these training montages to lead to this final sequence, sort of like Rocky in a way, where you have this big mission. They do the mission, but it goes further, like you said. You know, you've got the whole thing where Maverick saves Rooster's life, and then he goes down, and then Rooster saves Maverick's life, and they have that trade-off.
Mm.
Again, it's harkening back to the same storyline. It's Rooster and Maverick.
Yep.
Comes back to that because they understand what the point of the movie is. And then it keeps going. You've got this another sequence where they have to, you know, sort of diverge, and they have to, you know, sort of somehow make a miracle happen again. Yeah. Where they save their own lives. And then Hangman comes in. So it's just...
It's a roller coaster, but in a good way.
Yeah, it keeps on going. And in a way, I sort of compared this to Man of Steel. And I'm going to have a bit of Zack Snyder slander going on here, so close your ears. Man of Steel, the ending of Man of Steel is just, it keeps going on and on and on.
Yeah.
And none of it feels sort of, how would I put this?
It's not, it doesn't have like an emotional payoff to it. Like when Superman goes to stop the world engine,
mm-hmm.
and suddenly has to have a fight with like some CGI snakes that are protecting the world engine. Like you could just cut that out and just have Superman not fight anything and just destroy the world engine, which is a powerful moment when he, you know, flies up mm-hmm. and his powers are sort of fading because of the world engine. You could just cut straight to that moment.
Yeah.
And the movie just saves 10 minutes.
Yep.
And it's still the same sort of emotional value.
Yep.
You don't have to have him fight like CGI tentacles.
It's not more so that I need emotional value. It's more so the fact that everything that happens in this movie has purpose.
Right.
They do these sequences not because it looks cool, not because, you know, we need more fighter pilot stuff going on. They do these things because it comes back to Rooster and Maverick.
Yeah. Yeah.
So everything in this movie is about Rooster and Maverick's storyline.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And because it's so focused on that, it's such an emotional movie. And what I think was really good about this movie, and the MCU could take a lot of notes from this, is how to do comedy
mm-hmm.
without taking away from the seriousness of the situation.
Yep.
You know, there are some really funny moments in this movie. I think, you know, when Maverick climbs out of his girlfriend's window and falls onto the ground in order to try and not get spotted by his girlfriend's daughter.
Yeah.
And then he stands up and his daughter's just staring right at him.
Yeah.
That was a really funny moment and the entire theater was laughing.
Mm.
And then we get a few seconds to digest that. And then the daughter like delivers a really powerful line about like, please just don't break her heart again because he's done that in the past.
Yeah.
And that's a great example of how humor and emotional storytelling can like coexist
mm-hmm.
without like one defeating the other and everything just becoming a joke.
Yeah.
There's even comedic moments where Rooster saves Maverick and then he parachutes down and you think that Maverick's going to go up and hug him, but he just goes up and pushes him and he's like, what are you doing? You should have gone back.
Yeah.
And he's like, I just saved your life. And they sort of have this sort of fun dynamic.
Yeah.
Before it gets really serious and they realize that they're in enemy territory and they need to get the hell out of there, otherwise they're going to die.
Yeah. And there were points in this where I was a bit frustrated because, not to sound like I'm, you know, the expert in all of this, but in a way, average moviegoers have been so sort of saturated with this comedic nonsense that there were serious moments in this movie where people were laughing. And I was sitting there, I was like, this isn't meant to be a funny moment. Like, this is serious. And there were people laughing. And I was like, what are you doing? Just
appreciate the moment. Do you remember any specific moments?
I wish I could, but it happened quite often. If we keep talking, I'll probably eventually think of one. But, yeah, it just goes to show that, you know, movies nowadays just, they really don't get the action and the comedy all that right, but this is just a brilliant mix.
It's a good balance, to be honest. This is what I would like from the MCU if they did.
Yeah.
But if I could have my way, I would just have it be super serious.
Yeah.
Like, give me a Civil War movie that's just takes itself really, really seriously. And that's why I think the Russo Brothers movies are so good, because they are the more serious versions of the MCU movies. When you compare it to like a Spider-Man Homecoming or Spider-Man Far From Home.
Yeah.
But if you're going to do jokes, you got to do it, you know, you got to be clever about it. Mm. And this movie certainly is.
Yeah.
Is clever about it.
Yeah.
Another thing I really enjoyed about this film is just the American patriotism of it all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't get that a lot because America sort of hates itself nowadays.
Yeah.
Hollywood sort of hates America. They always sort of, you know, I mean, just look at the Oscars, you know, all the speeches about how terrible, you know, things are and how we need to do better and everything. But Top Gun is like such an American, like you said, it was like an American propaganda film. It certainly could be seen as that.
That's what the first one was all about. It was about recruiting people to fly in aviation.
Yeah.
And
it certainly probably did that, I think.
36 years later, I mean, is that still relevant? The question's up to you. But either way, they still understand that, you know, American patriotism is so soaked into the fabric of what Top Gun is. Mm. And they continue that. Regardless, they continue that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's something that if they took it out, it wouldn't feel like Top Gun, you know? It's got to have that American sort of, we are the best country in the world sort of vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I enjoy that, you know, I enjoy that. Do you have anything else you want to add? Otherwise, we'll go to the music segment, I think.
I mean, there's probably so much more that we can talk about, and, you know, we'll have our final thoughts. But, like, please, if you're still watching by this point, please support this movie. This movie's already doing fantastic at the box office, but it's movies like this that we need to succeed because, we need to show Hollywood, we need to show these executives that, we need practical effects. We need these sort of movies that stand up for what cinema is. 'Cause in a way, you know, Martin Scorsese said it's a dying art. We don't get many movies like this anymore.
Mm.
So when one of these comes out, you need to support it.
Yeah, for sure. And definitely support it in the theaters. And because watching this on your TV, no matter how good your TV is, it's not the same as watching it in a theater with a speaker system that loud. And, you know, seeing it with other people, you know, everyone's laughing at the jokes. Everyone's like super silent when there's an emotional moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at some stages in the cinema, you could hear a pin drop. Like it was dead silent.
Yep.
You know, if somebody's phone went off, it would have been very embarrassing because the cinema was just so silent.
Yep.
Because everyone was very invested. I haven't heard a single bad thing about this movie from anyone. The worst I've heard is people say it's really good and they give it a 7 out of 10.
Yeah.
It's like, well, what didn't you like? And they say, oh, you know, the romance could have been better. It's like, it's a Top Gun movie. Like, it's not a rom-com.
Yeah.
Like, you got to have a bit of a side romance there. And I thought it was fine. I didn't think it was terrible. And it doesn't, I don't go into my Top Gun movie thinking, oh, I just can't wait for Tom Cruise to, you know, to land the chick, you know?
Yeah.
It's just not what it's really about.
Yeah.
All I wanted from it was just an interesting side story that was done well and with a bit of honesty. And
yeah,
they did that. So yeah. I don't really have any complaints about that side of the film, which is where the only sort of complaints come
from. Probably, yeah, probably the biggest complaint about this movie is the romance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I thought it was fine.
Mm.
Yeah. So, music segment time. Goodness me, the music segment is, it's going to be a tough one. It was a tough one for us.
We've had a bit of a hiatus since Multiverse of Madness because we had our stand against whatever his name was, Danny Elfman.
Yeah.
I read a review on Letterboxd recently, which said hot take, and it was about Multiverse of Madness, and it was like hot take. Danny Elfman just absolutely pops off. His score is so fire on this movie. And I was just like, did you listen to this movie?
Have you listened to the 2017 Justice League?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Pretty similar. Pretty similar. So, what are we putting in the rewatch playlist, which is a place on Spotify? You can access it in the video description.
Mm-hmm.
What two songs are going in there this week
or
this podcast?
Look, Top Gun's all about, you know, Mighty Wings and Danger Zone.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's variations of them that played in this movie somewhere. But we wanted to pick original stuff. So we've gone with I Ain't Worried by One Republic. You said you're a fan of One Republic.
Yeah, I love One Republic. You know, Counting Stars, and there's a lot of other ones that I do enjoy.
Yep.
But
I think this track was fantastic.
Yeah, this track, I mean, this played during the beach scene, which we haven't talked about, but classic Top Gun scene that you just needed to have.
Yeah.
And everyone sort of knew that it would be in there somewhere.
Yeah.
And I think it might have even been in the trailer, to be honest. But it was so nice to see that. And then also see Tom Cruise, like, getting involved in there. You know, he's also quite, like, he's a fit guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, like, 50-odd. And he looks fantastic.
Yep.
But then you also have, like, these young guys, and they're showing off, like, the work that they did in the film. But it's not, like, blatant sexualization, like we've seen in the recent Thor trailer, where Thor just, like, got his clothes just ripped off.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be really funny. But, like, imagine if that was Natalie Portman. Like, we would not be having the same conversation about Thor.
Yeah.
As we are about if the roles were reversed, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
But here, I don't think it's sexualization. I think it's just people just having a chance having to show fun, off man. All. Yeah, they're having fun. And they probably just, like, literally just played a game of football. And then they just filmed it.
Yeah.
And they just said, like, don't worry about the camera. Just sort of play.
There is a shot where Miles Teller, like, dude got absolutely ripped for this movie. Yeah. Good on him. There is a shot where he's just kind of showing it off. But, I mean, who cares? Like, the guy's just having fun.
Yeah, but it's not like, wow, look how hot this is. Like, you know, let's get in close and let's different angles.
It's just him dancing.
Yeah, exactly. It's just about having fun. And there's obviously a female in there, and she has a sports bra on. And it's not about sexualizing her or sexualizing the men either.
Yep.
It's just about the team having fun.
Yeah.
And Tom Cruise is in there, and he's doing his Tom Cruise run, the classic sort of, you know, up straight, back, you know.
Yeah, and I love that, you know, this scene, and we'll talk about the scene right now because we didn't touch on it, but this scene also has some sort of, you know, there's a reason as to why it's in this movie.
Yeah, because they need to build a team dynamic.
And they explain it, you know, he's like, why are they here doing this? And he's like, well, you wanted a team, here it is.
Yeah.
They needed to sort of mesh together and, you know, become one. And that's exactly what this scene represents. And I love that the scene has meaning to it.
Yeah, it was even clever because he put a spin on it and he said it's like dogfighting because there was offense and defense at the same time. So it was sort of like an exercise for them, for their brains as well as just their bodies.
Yep.
And then becoming a team as well. I mean, this movie's so smart.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so surprising to me, man. But anyway, this song, I Ain't Worried, is like an actual banger. It's really good.
I'm
like,
going to listen to it.
Yeah, same. Yeah. It's going to go into my movie song playlist after this because it was really good. And it's such a fun, you know, beach tune. You know? Mm-hmm. Really good choice. Really, obviously not composed for the movie, I don't think. I might have to check that.
No, I would say it would be.
You reckon?
Yeah, I would say it would be.
Okay.
But we've also got Top Gun Anthem, which is like the iconic Top Gun score.
Yeah.
But we've got the sort of mix on it with the, obviously, the original Harold Faltermeyer.
Yeah.
Faltermeyer.
And it's gone through the Hans Zimmer machine.
Yep. And Lady Gaga as well. Look, she did a song for this. I didn't particularly enjoy it, but I also didn't particularly hate it.
I thought it was weird how they put it in. Like, I get that she did a song for it and they want to obviously put that song in the film, but like, does she know what Top Gun is? Like, does she realize what sort of movie this is? She made like a really slow song.
It was very slow. Yeah. Look, I think it serviced the final sequence well, but, you know,
might have
like,
to listen to it in isolation.
Yeah. Something like One Republic song got me so, like,
it's more of the vibe.
Amped up and hyped, and to me that's what Top Gun's about.
Yeah,
but look, Hans Zimmer, Lorne Balfe, also composed on this, which I think they're both like geniuses. You couldn't really go wrong with the music in this. It was pretty much destined to succeed.
Yeah, it was really, really good.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, we'll go to some final thoughts.
Certainly. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. I think I really enjoyed this, you know, entertainment value at its finest. It knows exactly what it's trying to do. It does it perfectly. Perfectly. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anything about this film that's particularly bad. I think I enjoyed it from start to finish. And it was just such a fun time, you know. I was completely immersed. Wasn't thinking about anything else.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't too long. It wasn't too short, which hasn't even been talked about. You know, usually when any movie comes out, people are like, oh, it's like 20 minutes too long. Don't hear about it with this movie because it's just fun from start to finish. In fact, I don't even know how long the movie is because it doesn't matter because I enjoyed it from start to finish.
I honestly couldn't... If this was 2 hours, 10 minutes, if this was 1 hour, 40, I couldn't tell.
Yeah, yeah.
I enjoyed every minute of this. If I pulled this up and it was 2 hours, 10, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, yeah. So for me, I think it does exactly what it was supposed to do. I want to see it a few more times before I consider the A+, but I'm going to just stay safe. I'm going to give it the straight A.
Mm-hmm.
This is by far the best movie of the year so far. And I think it's got a good chance of staying there. We'll see how Avatar 2 is. But I walked out of that theater and I was like, that's fantastic. I really enjoyed that. It was definitely worth going to the theater to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it makes the original better. That's all you can really ask for, I think, and respects the original and builds on it in a new and exciting way. So I very much appreciate that. I wish there were more movies like this and less movies like Matrix Resurrections,
mm-hmm.
which I looked at and just went, nah, I'm good. Because I know exactly what sort of movie that's going to be.
Mm.
And I thought the same of this, but I'm surprised.
Yeah.
Pleasantly surprised.
Yeah. Look, pretty much everything you said there, I'm on board with. I've seen this movie, or I'm about to see this movie. I've seen this movie on Wednesday. I've seen it on Saturday. And I'm seeing it again today on Sunday. So that's 3 times in 1 week. You've got 7 days in a week. I've pretty much seen it half the time of the week. I never do that. Like, I usually watch a movie once, and then if I want to watch it again, I'll watch it a few weeks later before it leaves cinema. The fact that I've seen this movie 3 times should speak to how good this movie is. I think this movie is absolutely phenomenal. There is very little to hate about this. And if you do hate anything about this, it's minuscule stuff.
Yeah, it's probably your own personal preference, just not vibing with the movie, which happens. I don't, you know.
Yeah. I think we need more stuff like this, which I've been saying throughout. I don't care. I'm going to keep saying it because we obviously need to hammer it into some sort of executive's heads.
Yeah.
Pretty much everything about this is perfect. We didn't even touch on the cinematography that much, but it's absolutely beautiful. Music's fantastic. Just the real nature of the movie is fantastic. Come on. Mm. Like, the dedication to the original, it makes the better original. It upholds, it uplifts the original. The storyline, the understanding of Joseph Kaczynski, he understands Top Gun. He knows what it's about. Just pretty much everything about this is like, okay, you've done it right. This you've absolutely nailed it. Could it be much better? Probably not. Probably not.
I mean, I don't know what you'd improve, to be honest.
Yeah, like, I don't hate the romance. I just wanted more of the romance.
Right.
And that's my biggest criticize with it. So I probably would have liked a bit more explanation or a bit more exposition going on between Tom Cruise and...
Jennifer Connelly.
And Jennifer Connelly. But what we got was fantastic. It added to the storyline. It did exactly what it was meant to do. I'm with you there on the A just because of that.
Yeah.
But this movie is absolutely fantastic. Yeah,
for sure. For sure. It's not a Dune for me.
No.
But it's number one of the year so far.
It's 100% number one. I was a bit on the fence when I saw it the first time. I was like, is Batman better?
Yeah.
This is a lot better on second watch.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll leave it there for today. Hopefully you can go and see Top Gun Maverick or go see it again if you've seen it already. We certainly will be probably rewatching it at least once in the next few weeks or so. It's been good talking about it. It's a great movie, and it's good to talk about a good movie. We've had a few duds. We've had Multiverse and of Madness and The Force Awakens. So hopefully we can keep the streak going and do a good movie next time. Otherwise, we might have to do The Last Jedi, so we might have to continue to procrastinate that before we sort of dive into the depths of hell of Rian Johnson's insane imagination. And the opposite of what Top Gun Maverick is, you know.
Yeah.
Instead of respecting the previous film, just completely disregarding it. Yeah. And obviously the fan reaction, I think, is justified because of that.
100%. Yeah.
So, yeah. In the meantime, though, thank you very much for listening, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.